America Weekend, Weekend.
And called Sabatino with Roland Smith, and we are back. And Roland, I have a question.
What kind of a question?
Oh, yes. You have a tendency every now and then of stumping me, as they will try to. You ask these interesting questions of, shall we say, random thoughts that fly in and out of your head. However, I have one, and I've been thinking about this. I had a conversation recently with a producer friend of mine from KTLA on the West Coast. And we've all had our very strange experiences in this business, the news business. What, in your estimation, I know you had many, was the most interesting and different experience of your career in the news industry?
Well, there are at least a number of different answers that I could give you to that.
Pick one or two of you.
But it has to be 9/11.
Really?
9/11, of course, is when the planes went into the World Trade Center in Manhattan.
I know you were on the air for a very long period of time.
Well, indeed. But even before that, my wife and I had just taken what is called in France a little pied-à-terre.
Yes.
A little small place right along the river on the Jersey side in mm-hmm. West New York, New Jersey. Because I was commuting something like 350 miles a day, we took this place so that I wouldn't have to commute every day. On 9/11... I was standing out on the balcony waiting, talking to my wife on the cell phone, waiting for furniture to be delivered to this particular apartment that we had rented. And I watched the plane go into the World Trade Center.
This is the first plane.
First plane.
It came from the north,
correct,
south into the first tower number one.
And I said to my wife, I says, oh my God, I said, you're not going to believe what happened. I couldn't tell what kind of a plane it was. I just, you know, it was so surreal,
yes,
at the time that you
mm-hmm.
don't believe that your mind doesn't believe what it's seeing. And I said, I'm going to be gone for several days. We've just had a major problem here. A plane, and I think it's a commercial plane, just hit the World Trade Center and exploded. And she said, oh my God, I'll talk to you later. And we hung up. I quickly got dressed and got into my car, and for a normal 8-minute drive, it took me an hour and 50 minutes to go that short distance.
Incredible.
Because everybody by that time was realizing there was a major problem. But nobody knew it was an attack by jihadists in any way. It was just what it was.
The news reports. Well, I was, as you know, I was on the Kosciuszko Bridge when it went past it. I'm sorry, the Gowanus Canal Bridge. When the second plane came over, I was.
You should
stuck
tell
there.
People around the country what's that between.
That's in Brooklyn. It's a canal that was used for transporting barges. It's still there, and the Gowanus leads directly from Brooklyn right into the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, adjacent to the towers. It comes up right next to the towers, and I was right across the river. And we were stuck there. I was stuck on the top of the bridge, just stuck there, staring at the second plane coming over. We couldn't go forward. They closed the bridge. They closed the tunnel. Couldn't go forward. Couldn't go back. We were sending kids down with $20 bills to get cups of coffee for us as they were. They were coming up with these big coffee urns down below the whatever the local coffee place was like. And we were stuck there watching the plane go by. And what fascinated all of us is that it came so close to us at the top of that bridge. We actually could see the people in the windows. And I remember this one young woman. I'll never forget her face. I could look right at her, maybe 1,000 yards away, but I could see her as clear as if she were in front of the hands in front of my face, staring at us, just staring. No expression, just staring as she looked out, and then they headed into that building. When it hit the building, the shockwave about 30 seconds later came back 20 seconds later and shook all of us.
Well, I remember the gasp in the newsroom when the first tower started to fall. And, you know, all I could think of, not all I could think of, but I did think at that time was, remember the reporter, I think he was a CBS News radio reporter, when the Hindenburg exploded.
Yes.
In Lakehurst, New Jersey.
Lakehurst, New Jersey.
And what he was, you could hear the almost the panic in his voice, but he was saying, oh, the humanity,
yes,
of it. And that certainly was a result of what we were witnessing on that very, very tragic day. I mean, that changed, that truly changed the world. There are events all throughout history that literally changed the world. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor changed the world.
Yes.
Hitler's annexation of the Sudetenland changed the world. Columbus's discovery of America changed the world. I mean, there are positive as well as negative changes. And we, as humanity, have a choice to be either participants in the change or victims of it.
We should talk about that one time. The event, in our estimation, that changed the world, for me, it's the bombing of Hiroshima. I believe that that singular event redefined our planet for all time, in my opinion. But we should talk about those events.
Well, we ushered in, certainly, the nuclear age at that time.
It was as much a decision-making process that got us to that. And the question of communication, because it really was a question of communication. The Japanese did not understand what we wrote in the Potsdam Declaration. They didn't understand it. It literally did not grasp what was... The English translation of it, they didn't understand what was being said to them.
The translation or the language was surrender or be crushed.
Correct.
That's not something that's easily translated into the Japanese characters.
But when you think about that and translate that same statement to today, using the social network media, what would happen? It in its context, it's fascinating. Because it changed the world, not just of the military direction, but of communication. Because they did not understand what we were saying. They didn't grasp the immediacy of the moment.
Well, if you recall our program last week, I tried to think of a Japanese word and characters that I couldn't remember, and I do now. It's called mokusatsu.
Yes.
It's two characters, moku meaning to kill, satsu with silence. And it has two translations. One means to refrain from comment, and the other one means to ignore.
To ignore.
It depends on how you use it.
Correct.
When it got translated, either in Japan or someplace else, the Japanese government was responding, the Diet was responding to the Potsdam Ultimatum by saying the Japanese government refrains from comment on the Potsdam Ultimatum. They want a little more time to think about the, you know, how do you respond to this?
And the question was, the Potsdam Declaration was saying you have no time to respond, you must respond.
Right. But it got translated, as I understand it, from a book by Stuart Chase called The Power of Words.
Wonderful, wonderful.
In which it translated to the Japanese government ignores the Potsdam Ultimatum.
Correct.
Several days later, Mr. Truman authorized the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
Correct.
I mean, now I always talk to my journalism students, you know, that's one word misunderstood. That's why we, as journalists, or why they, as budding journalists, need to be so, so careful in how they word things and what they think somebody says. You know, it's
fascinating. I always am focused on. That's why I use the bombing of Hiroshima as my focal point that changed the world forever. That one moment. Because it was as much that act as it was a miscommunication that got us to that.
Right.
And when it also got us into World War II, by the way, with the Japanese, because they didn't understand what we were saying. Not that that would not have happened anyway, but they didn't understand the communiques coming out of Washington. We had no idea what they didn't understand what we were saying, and vice versa.
Bellicose nations and belligerent people and dictators never understand the consequence of anything that they do.
Or they don't care.
Right. And, you know, I'd like to go back to, I mean, your original questions, because I think we should talk about this at some other time if you want, but there are a number of stories that I've covered through the years or that I participated in. That's the civil rights movement, for one. I mean, that's certainly 50 years old now.
And you had, as they say, to use the expression, boots on the ground.
Oh, indeed. I remember going into black churches and being a little concerned as the only white face there.
Yes.
With my little camera. and my microphone. And, you know,
you were covering
concerned.
A story. For you, it was covering a story.
That's correct.
And for them, it was an achievement of a lifetime.
And I should tell you the story one time when Bobby Kennedy first learned about the assassination of Martin Luther King. It was in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I was a reporter covering him at a local rally that was getting very, very belligerent.
Interesting.
And his words to that crowd from the bed of a big truck literally diffused the entire mood of anger and retaliation.
Extraordinary. Let's promise we'll do that sometime.
We will. There's a lot of things that, you know, both of us have had experience in that we would like to share with folks.
We're promising. Smith Sabatino, as always, we're back.
America, weekend.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Do you have trouble getting a good night's sleep in a hotel? Well, you're not alone. Many road warriors do, and many of them resort to pharmaceuticals to solve the problem. But before you do that, try a cheap trick that'll bring on the Z's and save money on meds. Here's the science of it. You may have noticed that when you take the kids on the road, many of them want to take their pillows. Maybe it's a security blanket thing, but for sure, it's the smell of home that creates the feeling of security in a strange hotel room. What's the cheap psychological trick? No need to carry the entire pillow. When you travel, just take the slept-on pillowcase, and the home sweet home smell will make it easier to go to sleep. No meds required. Have a cheap trick idea? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. The Good Samaritan law helps to protect rescuers from being sued when they volunteer emergency help. This is exactly what Linda had in mind when she pulled her friend out of their crashed car. Linda's friend was driving when the two of them were involved in a terrible accident. Fearing the car was about to erupt in flames, Linda quickly yanked her friend out, which contributed to her injuries. Now Linda's paralyzed friend is suing her. Who do you think will win this case? Stay tuned for the final verdict. The court ruled that since Linda was not specifically providing medical care, the Good Samaritan law does not protect her. Because she did not exercise due care when pulling her friend out of the car, Linda lost the case. And that's the final verdict.